is Phil Nee, hoping all your trails are happy. We'll talk again next hour with some community conversation on the morning show from WRCO-FM in Richland Center, Wisconsin. Stay dry. It's rainy and 61 degrees. Our update at 9 is sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry, a full-service jewelry store featuring a wide variety of styles, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Michael Cohen's testimony is expected to conclude today at former President Trump's criminal hush money trial. ABC's Aaron Kutursky explains what could happen next.
Once Cohen is finished, there may be an additional witness to enter a document or two into the record. But after that, prosecutors are expected to rest, confident they've proved Trump falsified business records to hide the hush money from voters.
It's not clear if Trump will testify in his own defense. Hamas and Israeli leadership are united in condemning the International Criminal Court, which is seeking warrants for war crimes and crimes against humanity against the leaders of each. Israel called today disgrace. Hamas said the prosecutor is trying to equate the victim with the executioner. There's uncertainty in the Middle East after the president of Iran was killed Sunday in a helicopter crash, and the ship that caused the Baltimore Bridge collapse in March has been refloated and moved away from the debris. This is ABC News. Firefighters in Arizona are still trying to get a handle on what's being called the Wildcat Fire in the Tonto National Forest. Over 13,000 acres have already burned, and there is 0% containment. Memorial Day cookouts may cost a little less. ABC's Rhiannon Alley says grocery prices have been falling over the last few weeks.
According to the Labor Department, prices for food at home fell by 0.2% overall in April. In some cases, the decline is even more significant. Prices for milk, chicken, fruits, and vegetables are down nearly 1%, while apples dropped 2.7%. Steak and ribs fell 2.3%, and eggs plummeted by 7.3%.
Apple may be ready to take a slice off the iPhone. The information's reporting Apple's working on a slimmer version of the iPhone to launch perhaps next year. Reuters says designs are still being tested. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Good morning. This is Pamela at Pamela's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Spring Green. Congratulations to all the graduates in the area, from 3K to a PhD. Come to Pamela's for that special watch or gift to honor all the hard work and dedication to your loved one's education. From Pamela's in beautiful downtown Spring Green.
The old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same, sure applies to the Phoenix Center. The bowling alley has been the go-to for good times and great food for generations in Richland County. It's where good friends become better friends and good times become awesome memories. From a delicious pizza to bowling to a conversation over your favorite drink. The Phoenix Center in Richland Center is the right choice every time. The Phoenix Center. Just call them at 649-7469. Today's forecast calls for a high of 73 with showers intermittently through the day. Variable clouds, isolated showers tonight, a low of 58. Tuesday, muggy with a few peaks of sun and a high of 82. Scattered thunderstorms, some of which could be severe tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow night. Wednesday, 67. Pleasant Thursday and 75. And Friday, 74 with a 50% chance of showers by afternoon. Currently, 62/100 of rain in the Pratt Funeral and Cremation rain gauge. It's rainy and 61 degrees in Richland Center.
For generations, the Cairns family has been rooted in Richland County as small business owners. At Julie Cairns State Farm, you will find a local, dedicated team that leads with honest intentions to properly protect you. Yes, saving money is important, yet so is doing business with local professionals that will be there when you need them. We're here to participate in your lives, in our community's growth, and in helping create opportunities to make positive changes. Yes, you can save money, and yes, we will offer you remarkable service. Yet most importantly, our core values will make you proud to do business with us. Like a good neighbor, Julie Cairns State Farm is there.
As we gather with loved ones this Memorial Day, let's remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice for our freedom. Their courage will always inspire us. This Memorial Day message is made possible by House on the Rock Attraction and Resort, Hillsboro Equipment, Robin's Nest Country Gifts and Flowers, The Shoebox, and Utter Brothers Creamery.
Hi, my name is Liz Perkins, RCHS co-principal. Although teens and young adults are becoming more independent, you still serve an important role in keeping them safe and healthy. Most addictions start in adolescence, a critical part of brain development. Young people need to know from you and our community how to make the right choice not to use substances. Get tools and tips at the Partners for Prevention Coalition of Richland County's website.
Jones Chevrolet in Richland Center is your local, family-owned, award-winning dealership for over a century. We always have one of the largest selections of trucks in Southwest Wisconsin. JonesChev.com is updated daily with specials on new and pre-owned vehicles. We even have a secure credit application online to help us help you faster. Bad credit? Good news, we can help. Our special finance manager, Melanie, has some custom finance options and is eager to help. Jones Chevrolet, Richland Center, your Chevy truck headquarters. Chevy, together, let's drive.
On our morning show today from WRCO, we have State Senator Howard Markline here and Representative Todd Novak as well joining us in the studio. Gentlemen, it's $1 million rain out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's rumbling out there right now, so it sounds pretty good. It's supposed to be like this for a couple days, but we need it.
Yeah, that's some money in your area, isn't it, there
for
the farmers?
Yes. And, you know, I just hope the rain keeps coming through the summer, because remember what happened last year? We kind of had a wet start to things, and then the spigot shut off. So let's just hope this just continues. So
yeah, indeed. Howard, you've been kind of making the rounds around your area too, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. So, we're just starting kind of the summer cycle of events and stuff. I was in Muscadet over the weekend for their Morale Fest, and I was there Saturday, and a beautiful, beautiful day. Nice weather and great turnout. And so it was good. I went to the fire department steak feed afterwards, and it was a nice crowd there for that. And, and I've been to, Waseca and Blue River, and been to a lot of these communities for their fish fries and steak feeds. And that's, I love to eat, So if you want to get me there, have some food. So, but, and it's cool how especially the fire and EMS departments support each other. Cause like at Muscadet, I mean, I ran into people from Lone Rock and from, just different, fire and EMS units from all over. They show up to support their brethren, and which is pretty neat.
What was the mushroom report in your areas? Anybody?
I've talked to people that looked pretty good. I was looking at Facebook, and people are posting all they got. Looks like they're pretty abundant. I don't know how the Muscadet. If I haven't heard how that festival went, because that was last weekend.
Yes, over the weekend.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that was. I'm sure it was a success. So,
did you get there early enough to get some, Howard?
You know what? I have never. I shouldn't admit this, but I've never paid for a Morel in my life. But I've eaten a lot of them. So I basically, if we Peggy and I go out looking for them, and we're not serious. I mean, I'm not gonna. We find them. That's great. We had some good morale. Actually, a couple weeks ago, they started kind of early this year. And we were talking about the weather earlier. I mean, last year, it was pretty dry overall. And I can't remember exactly what they were paying in Muscadet for the morels last year. I think it was like $100 a pound. And I heard from a couple of people last Saturday that this year was like $50 to $70 a pound, which is still, pretty pricey. I wouldn't pay for them. So we love to eat them. They're great. And it's kind of fun. I enjoy getting out doing that.
Yeah, you bet. You mentioned being in some areas, some steak feeds and fundraisers. And one of the overriding things I want to talk about, too, is the EMS and EMTs. And there's a little bit of a change in how you qualify to become one. And I think that was a big deal for a lot of people, wasn't it, Howard?
Yeah. And, you know, this started, gosh, probably half a dozen years ago or so when I did some rural EMS summits around my district, Darlington, in Lancaster, Plain, Elroy, and we did several rounds of these. And based on the feedback that we got, and these are from rural volunteer EMS units, okay, not paid paramedic, you know, units and stuff, we drafted and passed a number of bills. And some of these took a couple of sessions till we got them done. And one of them had to do with the National Registry Exam, NREMT. And the NREMT is a test, national test, that may or may not relate to what our local EMS units do. But they've showed me some of the questions on that exam. You know, and I've talked about this before, how, you know, what is the proper tire pressure for an ambulance in the mountains of Colorado? How do you treat a shark bite? I mean, just stuff like that. It just, you know, and it doesn't apply to anybody in Casanova. You know what I mean? So anyway, so we passed a bill last year, and it's in effect now, which would allow the local EMS units to decide whether or not they want to make this exam, national exam, mandatory for the lowest level of the EMRs. Okay, they're the lowest level on our spectrum of providers. And we've had some that have decided to make this optional. And the goal here is to get these volunteers on that first step of the ladder. Okay, these are the people that you know, if they, once you get them in and they're running with the crew and stuff, they the terminology becomes more common to them. And anyway, and we just were contacted a few weeks ago by this woman from Potosi, who and Potosi made it optional, and she's an EMR now, and she was just excited. And again, you have to pass all the coursework. I mean, this doesn't preclude or circumvent all of the coursework and the tests that you have to take in order to qualify, but it just makes this national registry exam optional. So I think you're going to see more and more of that test be optional around here. And then hopefully, you know, the people that become EMRs, again, they're going to run with the crews and then get more comfortable, confident, maybe. And then when they want to advance to the EMT level, then they will likely have to take the National Registry exam. But we need to get, you know, volunteers. Staffing is probably the biggest issue that we're facing with our local rural EMS units.
And Todd, you'd hate to deter somebody that was interested. Maybe they didn't want to do it because of that, right?
Right. It's hard. You know, it's not easy to be an EMT. It's a lot of work, and it takes a lot of training. And, you know, I always heard, you know, people would start the course, and they've got family. If you got a family and a young family, and, you know, and a job and stuff, it's hard to go to school and do all the training. So you want them trained, but you want to make it as you know, easy, not easy, but as accessible as you can. Howard's right. I mean, I think I've been in office 10 years, and I think this national registry has been a top thing since I've been in. And we've, you know, tried every year do some bills on, and Howard's taking lead on this, on EMT and trying to, you know, the main thing is I'm concerned about some departments because they just aren't getting the volunteers to come up and be trained. And, you know, it's not just EMTs too. It just seems to be a thing. You got fire departments and stuff and different even civic organizations where people just aren't stepping up. It's different times, and so it's important we make things easy for everybody.
Indeed, especially in the rural areas where you don't want to have the EMTs come from a lot farther away. You
know, right. I mean, your response time should be hopefully 5 to 10 minutes, if that. I mean, we have some municipalities in Lafayette County, Howard and I do, where the response time is 20 minutes. And that's just sometimes because sometimes one municipality can't get a full crew, so they have to call the neighboring one. And that's happened a few times. And that's kind of, you know, in a life and death situation, that's a scary thing to do.
Indeed. We also wanted to talk about RN staffing, Howard. And there have been some federal rules coming down the pike about that I think you were a little concerned about.
Yeah. So last week, I was invited to attend or spend some time with Boscoville Care and Rehab, and which I appreciate. It was a great opportunity. And last week was the National Skilled Nursing Week, you know, so they had invited me over and had a chance to meet with a number of their staff, which was great, and a number of the residents at Boscoville Care and Rehab. And again, going back to food, they served at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they served ice cream. So I was all in, of course, for that, you know, so, but it was a good meeting. But one of the reasons they asked me to be there is just to share their concern with these federal rules that are proposed to go into effect. And, you know, and the more I look at these, the more concerned I think I am, and we should all be, especially in our rural nursing homes. So, and these are the rules that, this is at the federal level, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, and would require various standards for how many RNs you have to have on staff 24/7, CNAs, et cetera. And the concern here is like our rural, one of the rules in here would require that a registered nurse, an RN, be on site 24/7, every day, every hour of the year. And we've got a number of nursing homes that where there's an LPN maybe on site, you know, during the night, or an RN is on call within minutes away from, you know, a local nursing home. And Boscoville Care and Rehab and a number of our nursing homes are really concerned about this. For example, this 24/7 requirement for registered nurses, the study that we got, independent study we got, said that 76% of the Wisconsin hospitals do not meet this requirement currently, okay? And they'd have three years here to adopt this. The question is, where are we going to get these nurses, these RNs? I mean, it isn't like we've got all kinds of unemployed nurses, RNs, sitting around Richland County and Grant County, and I, you know, all the counties around here, you know, in rural areas. So they just don't think they're going to be able to staff it, you know. And does it, you know, when you step back and look at it from a care standpoint, does it make sense? You have to have an RN sitting there at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, when rarely there's a situation that needs the assistance of an RN, as opposed to having that RN on call and require them to be within a few minute response time. So anyway, but I wanted to mention this because, again, our rural areas are the ones that are going to be affected the most. And one of the people that works with the state nursing home group association his quote was, Schmidt Woodland Hills, he said, got 50 beds, will have the same requirements and standards as a 500 bed facility in New York City. Okay. And again, when I read this requirement and these rules, proposed rules, this sounds to me like this is written by urban people, urban bureaucrats wrote this, not somebody from the rural part of our country. So hopefully, you know, this doesn't go into effect here for a few years, and hopefully they're going to hear a lot of feedback from a number of our rural nursing homes out here, because the reality is I don't know how they're going to be able to meet these staffing requirements.
Right. So it's a federal rule, Todd, but could the state not go along with it, or how does that work?
I don't know. We'd have to dig into it and see. I don't think you can just say you're not going to do it. I think that what the federal government's trying to do is go away from nursing homes, period. I think you've seen that over the years, is because we've lost a lot of nursing homes in the state of Wisconsin, and they're making it harder and harder for nursing homes to operate on other things. They just want everybody out of the nursing home. They don't want nursing homes anymore. They want you staying in your home with home health. They want you in an assisted living. They want you in, you know, an elder apartment. So I think the trend is that nursing homes will be a thing of the past. It's what I, you know, if I had to look forward and from looking back to now, I mean, just to, so.
There are some waivers, some limited waivers, they said, in this rule for hardship cases. Well, when 85% of the hospitals in our state don't meet these requirements for RNs and stuff, I don't, you know, are you going to give hardship waivers for all but 15% of your hospitals? I mean, that's, you know, it's my understanding waivers are supposed to be kind of the exception, not the norm. So anyway, I just, like I said, I think something's got to be done here at the federal level. And at a minimum, we need to create an awareness of what's going on because, you know, as Todd said, you know, these nursing homes provide a service to a lot of our residents, a lot of our citizens. You know, I don't think any of us are looking forward to the day when we can be in a nursing home, but we may have surgery and be discharged from a local hospital, at, you know, and need rehabilitation services. That's where we go, you know, and stuff. So we need those long-term care and rehab facilities, especially in our rural communities.
Yeah, most definitely. You've been in the news a lot lately, Howard, as co-chair of the Joint Finance. You've been quoted a few times. The disagreement over PFAS, you know, that kind of continues to make the news. Any update there?
Yeah, and it's incredibly frustrating. You know, like on PFAS, for example, a year ago, we were in the middle of the budget development, and the governor had proposed about $100 million for PFAS. And PFAS is it's a big issue. And I don't think it's really hit this area as bad as I've heard some stories around the state that are just, they're terrible. But we understand it's a big issue. The legislature put in $125 million, recognizing that this is pretty significant. And we set it aside in a trust fund, a PFAS trust fund. And then a bill was passed. And in this bill, there was a lot of conversation between the DNR and the bill authors on the bill, which basically would specify where the money goes and would also provide some limited protections for innocent property owners. Okay, about the best example I can give you is farmers, that where the DNR has issued a permit to have sludge from a municipality spread on a farmer's field. Okay, and guess what's in the sludge? PFAS. And so this farmer, and this has happened a lot up in northeastern Wisconsin. You know, the farmers, they've spread sludge on his field, and all of a sudden now this farmer's got PFAS on his land, and then try to get a loan, try to sell your farm with this forever chemical on there. So the bill, the Senate Bill 312, would have provided some protection for innocent landowners. Or even another example that was given where was a subdivision that used to be a farm. And, you know, they spread, again, sludge on it from the municipality. That subdivision is now built, and now your home is on top of a site that's got PFAS in it. So we need to have some protections for innocent property owners, and, you know, especially farmers that had this stuff spread on their land. And the farmers, they had no idea what PFAS even stood for or what it was. So I think that made a lot of sense. And I think the governor wants to have the DNR have the ability to basically sue, you know, whoever they want. And they say, well, we're not going to sue those people. Well, I don't always trust, you know, the government. I don't always trust the DNR. You know, they can, you know, if they want to sue you, they can sue you. And I think that's a horrible position to be in. So that's the debate, you know. And so we passed Senate Bill 312 and went through the Assembly. Senate went to the governor's desk. Before the governor took action on the bill, Mark Bourne, who's the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee with me on the Assembly side, is Representative Bourne. And we said to the governor, please do not veto this bill. You veto this bill, you are essentially slamming the door on our ability to get this money out to communities that need it and homeowners and stuff that need it and stuff. And anyway, and obviously the governor vetoed the bill, which was unfortunate. So I don't know. I don't think there's any pathway for us to release the bill because, you know, we pass a bill. The legislature passes a bill. It goes to the governor. He vetoes it. What is the standard for the override of a veto? It isn't a committee. One committee, the Joint Finance Committee, can't override a veto. It takes 2/3 vote of the legislature. So I don't see how we're going to, which is unfortunate. It's tragic that we're not going to be able to get this money out the door.
Mm-hmm. I know in a municipality like you, you're the mayor of Dodgeville, but you're not anymore?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. But having run the city, certainly that's a concern as far as, you know.
We were ahead of the game. We had all the wells tested to make sure, and PFAS came back non-traceable. That's a new thing, which you're going to have in a lot of municipalities. You know, it's not expensive. It's not cheap to get wells tested. I think Dodgeville's got 8 wells. And we wanted to be ahead of the curve to make sure. But some municipalities can't afford to even test their wells. So there needs to be some programs and some money for that. And in the scheme of PFAS, because there's still so much unknown, the money that we're talking about here really isn't that much. This is going to cost a lot of money over the years. So this money that the governor vetoed is just a drop in the bucket. It was just going to start the process rolling. So it is unfortunate. You know, who would want to buy? Who's going to sell their land if there's PFAS that aren't their fault on there? And who's going to buy it? I mean, it's just, and that's the only thing that's holding the bill up, and why he vetoed it. And I just don't trust. We need to have things in black and white because you can't tell me the DNR. There's too many horror stories out there already about the DNR suing over different things. So,
Todd Novak and Howard Markline of the Morning Show will have more coming up in just a moment.
My friends swim no matter the season, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. Now, thanks to Skyrizi and Clear Skin, count me in. With Skyrizi, Risen Kizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. 3 out of 4 people achieve 90% clear skin at 4 months.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis, and visit SkyRizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
The Richland Family Prescription Center's primary function is to fill your prescription accurately and to provide added value services to enhance your health. Filling your prescription is only the first step. Understanding your medication and the importance of compliance will greatly benefit your medication outcome. Whether it's a first-time visit or they've seen you before, the Prescription Center's friendly and knowledgeable staff is dedicated to providing you with a quality pharmacy experience, and they have built their reputation by going the extra mile to ensure your satisfaction. The Richland Family Prescription Center, your one-stop source for all of your prescription and healthcare needs. Your complete customer satisfaction is their top priority.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Hey guys, I've devised a plan to find better home internet. Kids, you scout the web for the best deals. Honey, you monitor our projected data usage.
Or we could avoid that hassle and go with U.S. Cellular's home internet. There's no guesswork, and their internet's faster than ever.
U.S. Cellular new and improved home internet. Just $34.99 when bundled with a wireless plan.
Terms apply. Visit cellplus.com for details.
What are you paying for home internet? It's time to save and head to your nearest local U.S. Cellular store. See us in Richland Center, Spring Green, Reedsburg, and Viroqua.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Welcome back to the Morning Show on WRCO Radio. I'm Phil Nee, and we are joined by Representative Todd Novak and State Senator Howard Markline joining us here on the Morning Show today. And moving on with some other notes, there were some other bills that that wound up being vetoed. Some other things you wanted to talk about, Howard, in terms of recent news, teacher apprenticeships and some of those things?
Yeah. So on the teacher apprenticeship, that was a bill that, again, I thought would have had strong, it did have strong support in the legislature, but basically would permit our colleges of education to have teachers get paid to be to get into the classroom. And the idea was to get potential future teachers into the classroom before their final semester of college. Because what happens, unfortunately, and I've heard this more than once, is somebody wants to be a elementary education teacher or a high school teacher. And, they go through 3.5 years or more of college, and then they do their student teaching where they're in front of a classroom for the first time. And all of a sudden, it's like, listen, this isn't what I signed up for. I mean, I enjoy history, I enjoy and all that, but geez, the classroom management part of it and stuff is a challenge. And that's where, good teachers know how to manage that classroom, some of those issues. So this was money that was set aside for that purpose. And unfortunately got vetoed, and which was unfortunate. So and then the other bill, I think that was I was very disappointed in, that was the Chippewa Valley, Eau Claire Valley hospitals up there. Again, we had an unexpected closing of the hospitals up there, and it's a big hit to the community. And so we had passed legislation again, allocating $15 million for the emergency departments. From what we heard from the hospitals up there, and I've met with the hospitals, it sounds like the emergency departments are the area where they needed the most help. That's where they had the big spike in the volume of people getting into the hospitals. So we allocated $15 million for that, and it was going to be for Eau Claire and for Chippewa Valley. And the governor partially vetoed that and expanded the use of that money to 18 counties in northwest Wisconsin. And that certainly wasn't our intention. You know, we wanted it focused in one area, and then basically kind of opened it up to be able to use it for whatever purpose. So anyway, I was disappointed. Again, we got money that we had set aside. That was something that we passed near the end of the session. It was, and Todd and I serve a long ways away from the Eau Claire and Chippewa area, but you know, it's a very unfortunate situation, and we're sensitive to the issue, and we passed that bill, which I think made a whole lot of sense, but anyway, unfortunately the governor vetoed that, and so that money is probably not going to get distributed.
Concerning, certainly for our areas, because it could happen elsewhere, Todd.
That is true, and I think we're very fortunate that we have some pretty good hospitals in southwest Wisconsin, and so there's some other hospitals, I believe, that are on the radar. I think Marshfield is cutting back and doing some stuff, too, so it's a little concerning to see this happen, and hopefully there isn't a ripple effect across the state. But, I mean, you had this one hospital. This was, I don't know, $15 million? Divide it by 18 counties or for cover 18 counties, that isn't very much money. $15 million, I know it sounds like a lot, but it isn't in the scheme of things to start with. And then to water it down even more really doesn't help much. So.
Yeah, and again, it's just disappointing because, again, we want, whether it's PFAS, whether it's the hospitals, yeah, we voted for that. Get the money out of here, to get that money to where we had intended it to go. And again, unfortunately, the governor vetoed it. And I don't know that there's a pathway to getting that, whether it's PFAS or getting those that money to those hospitals. It's frustrating.
What was the reasoning, you think, that he vetoed the hospital?
Well, I think he wanted to give as much flexibility to the Department of Health Services as possible, to make it much, much broader, that basically any hospital in that whole region could qualify, and it could be used for anything, any kind of a service, which is... That's okay, but that doesn't really address the kind of the local issue up there, which... It looks like it's the emergency departments is where the most pressure has been placed on with the closing of that hospital.
Terrible for their community, though, as you mentioned.
No doubt. Yeah. We talked about nurses a little bit ago. I'm sure a lot of the staff is going to find jobs. I mean, there's in healthcare, there's big demand for nurses, all kinds of healthcare professionals, but it's disruptive. Can you imagine your local hospital? And there wasn't a long lead time in terms of the closing the hospital up there. It was done very quickly.
Pretty quickly. Also in the news recently, the campus, mm-hmm. Platteville turning the keys over to the county here coming up. And a lot of people discussing the fact that, the $2 million allocated, but maybe we need some more. What have you heard about that? What are your thoughts on that, Howard?
Yeah. And another thing that I've heard from locally here is from the local community theater group that has material at the campus. And there's concern that they're not going to be able to get their material out, whether it's, I think it's stage settings and maybe some costumes and that kind of thing. Stuff that the university does not own, and they want to be able to access that. So anyway, we contacted UW System and we said, hey, listen, it's not your property. The system apparently sent a letter to the county saying that we want everything. We're going to take everything out of there on May 16th or some, mid-May kind of date. And the local group was just concerned that they're going to take take their property. Well, we talked to the system. They said, come on, you know, guys, let's be reasonable. Let them get in there and take their whatever property props and that sort of thing that they have there. So hopefully, you know, that's been accomplished. And if not, if they can't work that out, that's pretty sad. You know what I mean? It's not, it's not owned by the county, and it's not owned by the university. So hopefully that'll get resolved. So, and I haven't seen, you know, the system or I don't know that there's been any requests made yet from the county to WEDC in terms of, you know, the application for the money is going to have to come from the county. And I don't know if that's where that's at. I guess I haven't heard locally if they're have submitted that yet to WEDC or not.
Other communities are going through the same thing, though. You know, it's kind of maybe $2 million isn't enough, right?
Yeah. You know, and that was the amount, you know, $2 million per campus is what we put in the bill, and there's like $20 million total statewide. So, and you know, it's going to vary a lot, I think, depending on your where you're at. I think if you're in a more urban area, you know, you're going to have probably more options for redevelopment, repurposing of the campus than we will here, you know. So, you know, $2 million might be plenty in Waukesha or West Bend, or, you know, but here, you know, yeah, maybe not.
You've been around the Platteville campus as well recently for some things.
Yeah, so. I was down there for lunch with the Chancellor Tammy, and then last week or 2 weeks ago, we were together at Schulzburg School District for a presentation by one of the high school classes, and. I'm really actually, I know some people probably don't like her, especially up here, but she's really connected and really working hard to keep things going. And, you know, what's going on with our colleges is what hit our school districts over the past few years is declining enrollment. And so now, you know, they're trying to adjust to that. But she's trying to do a good job, and I know Sauk County stepped up, and they're going to subsidize or put money into their campus to try to keep it. I think it's like $3 million a year or something like to that to the Baraboo campus. So, yeah, it's something to keep a watch on. And as you see, it's happening all across the state to these two-year colleges. So it's the decline in enrollment is just really starting to hit and take hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're probably seeing that especially. You have a lot of small high schools around your area.
Yeah, I got 14 or 15. And Howard and I have got some school districts that are 200 kids maybe, and some that are 2,000. And you know, I look at, I'll go back to Lafayette, a county of 15,000 people. They have 7 school districts down there, and 3 are with 5 miles apart with about 200 kids or less each. But, you know, if the communities want to keep their schools, that should be their choice. I know Minnesota went through a phase where they forced consolidation and stuff, and I don't ever think the state needs to go that route. I think the school districts need to make that decision themselves, but it's not going to get any better. And some of these schools, I'm not sure how they're going to do in the future. I know even in my old alma mater, Iowa Grant and Highland over in that area is struggling a little bit with enrollment. It's all enrollment driven. Even Dodgeville has lost 140 students in the last 4 years, 140, 150. So it's your bigger schools too. I think River Valley has really had declining enrollment. So it's going down pretty quick.
Indeed. Tough to attract staff and that kind of thing when you're, you know, you got a lot of other bills to pay and you're a small district and, you know, things like that, Howard.
Yeah, well, it sure is. I mean, you know, and Todd nailed it. I think declining enrollment is your enrollment basically sets the threshold for what your budget is. Okay. And, you know, if you lose 4 students in Iowa Grant or Riverdale or Richland, you know, let's say your cost per pupil is 12,000-13,000, somewhere in there. So where do you cut 50 grand? I don't know. Your busing is the same. Your heat light's the same. You can't cut staff, you know, because, you know, and these 4 are not, you may have an increase in your 5th grade and it, you know what I mean? And stuff. So it's tragic. And I, you know, we need to take a look at that. You know, and I don't know. And right now that enrollment decline is smoothed out over a 3-year period of time. But, you know, it's, and I, you know, the issue is, it's a K-12 issue, and it's, and we know how many first graders there are, second graders. I mean, you can see this coming, you know, 10 years down the road and stuff. And it's not looking good, because, you know, we're graduating 100 and our first grade is 74, or you know what I mean? So we can see that. It isn't like this is a short-term problem and it's going to fix itself at all. So, and then of course, you know, that all rolls into the K-12 system, or UW system, you know, so, and, you know, it's a numbers game there as well.
And I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I think I've talked to a lot of superintendents. What's killing them this year or the last couple of years is inflation more than anything. I mean, they're, health insurance costs, like anything, went up 10% to 14%, and then, you know, the cost of fuel and busing and stuff. So that's really ate into their bottom line is inflation too. So it's just kind of like this perfect storm of declining enrollment, inflation. We did increase school aid this last budget, even though a lot of people say it's the state's fault, but it's just this perfect storm that we're in right now. So,
has there ever been any talk to go away from it being enrollment based, though?
I think a lot of people have looked at the school formula. I mean, it's outdated and stuff. It needs to be, and it's been tweaked. I mean, there's different things I suppose we could do. I mean, I don't know if there's ever been really a sit down and tear it apart and put it back together kind of thing since I've been there. Howard would know more about that than his position at JFC than I am. But, you know, there's ways you can get more money to school, special education and things like that. But, you know, I think, I hate to say this, but part of our school system is, you know, Milwaukee based. You know, whatever we give, Milwaukee gets the vast majority of it. I mean, they just passed a $288 million referendum barely in Milwaukee, and that still wasn't enough, and they're going to lay teachers off over there. So that tells you something. I don't know. Howard may know more about school formula, but if it's ever been looked at rewriting or tweaking, or I don't know.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, the issue always is, in any conversation we have on funding, I don't care what the topic is, but it's who you know, who's going to be winners and who's going to be losers. And of course, the Veronas of the world growing, DeForest, Suwanee Keys, Middleton, there's no problem. I mean, this, you know.
Sun Prairie is now.
Sun Prairie, sure. Another high school. You know, I mean, and that's, you know, there's, you know, we're out here in a, you know, declining enrollment environment, and it's tough, you know. And I've shared with my district administrators. I mean, I don't know where the heck you cut. So going back to your question regarding should it be enrollment based, you know that. Can certainly be challenged. So, should a school district of 1,000 students get the same amount of money that a school district of 200 students? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, you can throw out enrollment, but then, I mean, is that equitable? That, you know. You know, I mean, because we have different sizes of districts all over. There's got to be some correlation, I would think, you know, of enrollment. Otherwise, you know, we've got districts, 2,600, you know, in a district down to a couple hundred, you know, and the school district with 2,600 needs probably a little bit more money, mm-hmm. Than somebody with 200, you know, in total, you know.
Unless you went by like Division I schools, certain amount, Division II, you know, enrollment wise.
There's also this thing called the Constitution that's flared up before called the Uniformity Clause. You know, when you talk about making tweaks, because I've always thought about, ideas to pump more money into rural schools and stuff like that, but then you always run into the uniformity clause and the state constitution and litigious society we're in right now. Somebody's going to sue no matter what we do. So, and that's just the new norm. So,
you are running again, Todd?
I am running again. Unfortunately, I'm losing Richland County, the piece I have, the little corner. My district changed. So, I have all Iowa County, all Lafayette County and northern part of Grant, Blue River, Muscadet, that kind of area, go up to Finnemore and then into Dane, Mount Horeb, and Blue Mounds. So that is my new district. So been kind of out and about just trying to meet my new constituents. I'm fortunate most of my district is part of my old district. So like probably 65% of it, 70 is my old district, which they all know me. And also the new part of my district, like the eastern part of Iowa County and the northern part of Grant, they know me too. My years at the newspaper, I'm known in Iowa County. And then I finally have the full Iowa Grant school system now because I took all that. Travis Tranel had part of it and I had heard of it. Now I have all of it. So I'm pretty well known in a lot of that area. So been spending some time in Dane County trying to get to know the people of Mount Horeb and Blue Mound. So it's been interesting. So
it's a change for you, but you're trying to spin it into a positive, it sounds like.
You gotta put it into a spot. I'll be probably one of the top targeted seats this year, but I kind of usually am. And so people will be hearing and seeing a lot of me all over, I'm sure, probably somewhere on this radio station and ads and stuff. And I know you guys love election years. I know your listeners might not, but it's... It's going to be interesting.
And you don't know who your Democratic challenger will be.
I have an opponent from Mount Horeb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's not a primary for your running.
No, nobody's running against me. Nobody's running against her. So, don't know much about her. I just know she's from Mount Horeb. So,
okay. And Howard, you're not up for election this year.
I'm not, but, you know, I've, similar to Todd, you know, I've got some new area, in my district. I pick up, Richland County, Sauk County, and pick up Crawford County. So I've been spending some time in Perdicheen, Seneca, Waseca, you know, that area, and then part of Dane County as well. So I'll be in Belleville tomorrow. I've been in that area a fair amount, just, you know, getting to meet people and stuff. So, but I did want to take a minute to thank. I think we talked about this last time I was here about the County Road T Bridge over the Wisconsin River at Blue River. And what was going to happen there, they're going to replace the bridge, which needs to be replaced. But they were going to close that bridge while the construction project went on, and which would have affected a lot of people. The Riverdale School District, part of it's on the north side of the river, would affect fire and EMS, would affect people that live on one side of the river, work on the other, and all that. So we reached out to DOT, and I really encouraged the local fire department, EMS. I talked to the Riverdale District Administrator, you know, to contact the DOT and all that. And anyway, fortunately, a few weeks ago, we got word that what they're going to do is they're going to build a bridge parallel to existing County T. So County T will remain open and during the construction project. Now, it will require them to, they say, move the project back a couple years, but everybody's happy with that. If you got to wait 2 years for a new bridge, so be it. We'd rather have it done later, but keep the bridge open. And so, and again, just thanks to everybody that weighed in and got, it paid off. And so, and then on another bridge related project, I heard on Saturday that the Lone Rock Bridge, I think the ribbon cutting will be in mid-August. And so I think that's actually ahead of schedule. And that's, you know, from all I've heard from everybody on that project, we used the design build concept for that. And it really worked well. It was a perfect project to use the design build concept. And happy, otherwise we wouldn't be opening that bridge up for 2 or 3 years down the road, I believe.
Which is interesting. I was going to say, they went through flooding last year, which kind of set them back all of a sudden to be...
And then it got dry.
Yeah, and then to be ahead of schedule. Yeah, then it got dry.
I come up here through Lone Rock. That bridge amazes me. I was looking at it again this morning, how fast it went. And I never dreamed when I got elected there'd ever be a new bridge across that river. So it's been pretty impressive. And I don't know, did they ever sell the old bridge or are they going to just...
I don't think they got anybody to... Yeah, to... Yeah. So, and, you know, often, you know, we sit here and criticize state agencies, but I just talked to DOT Secretary Craig Thompson last week, and I told him, I said, you know, I was very pleased with the way that project went. You know, the DOT was incredibly responsive. They were, first of all, they were open to using the design build concept there. And kudos to the Kramer. North America was the contractor on that, and there's a lot of people obviously involved in a project of that size, and the coordination was wonderful, and so they're excited. I heard, I don't know if I think this is official, but I heard that one of the Lone Rock fire trucks is going to be one of the first vehicles to cross the new bridge, and that would be very, very appropriate.
As it should.
Yes.
That's awesome. And then previously when you were talking about the Blue River project too, that's an example of people being heard, because that was really a hot topic there for a while.
Oh, gosh, it was. I mean, I can tell when, you know, things are a concern for people. And again, I think it was back a few months ago in Blue River, one of their steak feeds and stuff. And it's just, you hear from a lot of people, you know, and I talked to, district administrator at Riverdale, you know, and it's just the busing, the logistics and stuff. It just, you know, and.
And safety and fire.
Safety
and
fire, yeah. And, yeah. You know, and again, I just complimented the DOT. Well, tell you what. And I talked to Steve Williamson about this. So during this whole negotiation process, you know, the DOT told Steve, he said, well, just park a fire truck on the north side of the river. And, you know, well, that doesn't do much good. You know what I mean? When you got your fire station, your crew and everything, you know. So anyway, it just... whatever.
They worked it out.
They worked it out. Yep. The end result was positive, and which is a good thing. And, it takes you a while sometimes to get to the right answer, but they got to the right answer.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon then.
Thanks,
hopefully.
Phil.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. State Senator Howard Markline and Representative Todd Novak on today's morning show.
Dunkin' Reward members can look forward to the fresh offers, including a $2 medium hot or iced coffee, limit one per member per day, triple points when boosted members place an order through the mobile app on Wednesdays, and 100 bonus points for all members who place an order through the mobile app on Mondays. Those who aren't Dunkin' Rewards members can sign up for free on the Dunkin' app or by visiting DunkinRewards.com. Get a free medium beverage with your first purchase, so quick sign up and start earning free Dunkin' today. And remember, Richland Center runs on Dunkin'.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home. Want to improve your sleep quality? Maybe a mattress with a built-in cooling cover is just what you need from American Bedding that is made right here in Wisconsin. Stop down to our newly remodeled showroom and see why we have quickly become Spring Green's largest mattress dealer. With over a dozen mattresses on display, our expert staff will assist you in finding the perfect mattress to give you a quality night's sleep. Located on Highway 14 next to the Ring Brothers.
Looking for a rewarding outdoor job opportunity? Join the House on the Rock Resort Golf Course team in Spring Green. They're hiring maintenance mechanics, grounds care team members, flowerbed care groundskeepers, and more. A good driving record is required for these positions. They offer both full-time positions with 5 shifts a week and part-time work. Some roles are year-round, while others are seasonal. Apply now by calling 608-935-3639, extension 1201, or print an application at thehouseontherock.com. Be part of the dedicated team and enjoy working in a beautiful golf course setting.
On Memorial Day, we pay tribute to the men and women who laid down their lives in service to our country. Their sacrifice will never be forgotten. This Memorial Day message is made possible by Burnham Lumber, Sean's Auto Repair and Performance, Richland Cattle Center, Jay's Power Center, Richland Family Prescription Center, Muscadet Mini Mart, and Williams Chiropractic.
Looking to make your next major career move and find a place to call home? Rockwell Automation is hiring primarily second shift assemblers and material handlers in Richland Center with the ability to move up and advance your skills with ample growth opportunities. What could be better? If you're looking for a traditional work week, predictable and stable work schedules, and an environment that's clean, comfortable, and friendly, and let's not forget about the amazing benefits that begin on day one, Rockwell Automation might be the place for you. Learn more and apply at rockwellautomation.com/careers and search for Richland Center.
Working outdoors often results in a great feeling afterwards, the feeling of having achieved something. Whether it's tackling fallen limbs, cutting firewood, or clearing land, Steel has a chainsaw for your next project. Find your Steel at Hillsboro.